This is BBC Radio 4, the Home Service. Saturday Night Theatre. We present the first production in the Flora Robson Festival, in which Dame Flora stars in some of her favourite plays. To open the festival, she has chosen to appear as Sister Agatha in The Return by Bridget Boland. Convent parlor of an order of strictly enclosed nuns in an English Midland town in 1949.
Ah, Mother Prioress. Good morning, Reverend Mother.
I'm not disturbing you, Father. You have finished your breakfast.
Thank you. Yes, yes, I'm ashamed to say I have. Yes. Bacon and eggs and salt and pepper and marmalade. All forbidden fruits, aren't they? You people feed your chaplain like a fighting cock, simply to show your contempt for the secular clergy.
Nonsense, Father. A parish priest has a heavy day's work to do.
Oh, but how you despise us for doing it on a full stomach. Oh, I know. And not just the humble parish priest, either. You despise me with an egg, but you despise the bishop with a chicken. Well, now, and how's everything at home, Reverend Mother? All the sisters fat and fit, I hope?
Thank you. The community are very well.
I sometimes feel I ought to stick my head through that grill of yours in the parlor wall here every morning and bawl out any complaints.
No.
Well, is there anything?
Just one or two things, Father. There is the matter of Sister Agatha.
Yes, how long is it that Sister Agatha has been a nun?
36 years, Father.
36, 49, 1913, that year of years.
1913, why, Father? What was there about 1913?
It was the year before 1914, remember? The year before the end of the old world. It was the last year of security in the old order. It was the last year that the aeroplane was a stunt and the motor car was a freak. The last year in which no one questioned the existence of a ruling class or that a gentleman was more likely than not to be a man of honour.
Was it?
Well, don't you agree?
I had been a nun some time already, Father. I entered in 1904.
You?
I imagine I am quite an old woman.
God bless my soul. Oh, I beg your pardon. But, well, do you know, Reverend Mother, now that I know you're much older than I am, I shan't mind your getting your own way so often. Well, we were going to talk about Sister Agatha.
She is 58.
You must have known her as a novice.
Oh, yes, I remember her coming. I was interested because I had known her as a child. And young nuns still have a lot of curiosity and...
And common humanity. Don't apologize. What was she like?
As a child. A boisterous little thing. Always getting her elder sister into trouble. Cecilia, she was at school with me. They were a strange family. My father frightened me when I first went to stay at Brattesley. A huge house, you know, in Norfolk. The Fosdykes, he said, mad as hatters. No one to marry in Norfolk, of course, except each other. It gave me the most alarming ideas.
And when she came as a novice, as a postulant, before she got her habit?
Awkward, ungainly. I remember thinking she would never learn how to move without striding and swinging her arms like a windmill. For years, even without raising your eyes, which, of course, we don't do unless we have to, you could tell Sister Agatha in a file of nuns by the way she moved.
I'm finding out as much about you, Reverend Mother, as I am about Sister Agatha. Why had she entered?
She had a vocation.
No unhappy love affair, for instance? Family crisis?
I was not even mistress of novices then, Father.
Well, but you knew the family.
I had known them. One is allowed letters from home once a year while people still trouble to write.
Yes, yes, yes. And after 36 years, she wants to leave.
She has discussed it all, of course, with our spiritual director. But Father Augustine is a Carmelite, of an enclosed order like our own. It was he who said it was time to consult you.
I've made the inquiries you wanted about what's left of her family, and I've talked to the bank and your solicitor and so on. But she mustn't do it, Reverend Mother.
Of course, when all the inquiries are complete and she knows what she's facing, if she still wants to, we must submit the case to the bishop and eventually to Rome.
She mustn't do it.
She is older, of course, and a dispensation of vows is usually allowed, but I imagine...
It isn't that.
On the spiritual side...
I'll leave that to you and Father Augustine. It isn't that.
What is it, Father?
It's too long since 1913.
I will send for Sister Agatha now. I want you to talk to her. If you'll be good enough to ring that bell.
Yes, of course.
I should like you to explain her family situation to her, whatever it is, and anything else you think she should know.
Look here, Reverend Mother, it's still only 7:30 in the morning. All right, sooner or later, of course. I don't know why the idea should be so alarming anyhow.
I was afraid you would find it so.
Your sister Agatha is another human problem, and I loathe everyone I come up against in a parish teeming with more human problems every day than all the modern novels ever written.
Yes, Father.
Yes. You'd take the lot in your stride, wouldn't you?
Oh, Sister, would you be good enough to tell Sister Agatha the chaplain would like to see her now?
Yes, Reverend Mother.
Thank you, Sister.
You've talked to her and Father Augustine, too, about the significance of her vows, all that.
For some months.
Good. You know her. Do you think she could be happy now in the world?
Happy? I'm not sure that that would matter so very much, but she might well be. Women of her age seemed pretty happy when I was a girl.
Yes, yes. I see what has been left out of the discussion so far. Tell me, she's perfectly normal.
Oh, I should say so.
Not neurotic, hysterical?
No.
Why not?
I beg your pardon?
In the name of fortune, why not? Here's a woman who shut herself up from the world at the age of 20, who's lived on cabbage water soup and vegetables cooked without salt, and slept on planks, and got up at 4 in the morning and not laid eyes on a human being outside the community for 36 years. And when she finally tells you she can't stand it another moment, you tell me she doesn't seem at all unusual. Why not? What's the matter with her? What's the matter with her?
She hasn't got a vocation.
And how long has she been finding that out?
8 or 10 months, I think.
She wasn't suffering the tortures of the dam for a moment before that.
Why should she be? I fancy she wrestled with her conscience for perhaps 2 years before she would admit it to herself. Not longer. The confessional is a useful safety valve for such feelings as soon as they become conscious.
All right, then. Give it 33 years. Why not before that?
Because before that she had a vocation for the contemplative life. People change, Father. Or at any rate, women do.
Reverend Mother, how old were you when you came through that door for the last time?
19, I think.
And anything you've learned about life, you've learned inside these walls.
Yes, Father, you're right. There's a whole world I can't help Sister Agatha about. That's why she is to talk to you. Ah, Sister Agatha. Father Blake has been making inquiries for us, Sister, about your family and what your financial situation would be and so on if you decided to appeal for a dispensation from your vows.
Thank you, Reverend Mother.
Good morning, Sister. I hope you won't feel it impertinent of me to have been poking among your private affairs,
No, Father.
I fancy I know more about them than you do now.
I was telling Father Blake that I remember your sister, Cecilia, at our school. She was a dear little girl, very quiet and pretty. I hope she is still alive. That is the sort of thing Father Blake and you are going to talk about. Now I'll leave you together. Take as much time as Father Blake can spare, sister.
We have now been put at our ease, sister. Only personally, I hate being put anywhere, even at ease, don't you? Well, come and sit down. She's an amazing woman, the prioress. What do you make of her yourself? Well, come on now. I never knew the nun yet that wasn't the better for a little uncharitable gossip about her mother superior.
She makes a magnificent prioress. She was a great mistress of novices.
But you don't think she's much of a nun?
Oh, all right.
I said it. Why do you want to come out?
I think I'm wasting my time. And God's.
Hmm? God, of course, has plenty. But you're getting on for 60. Is there something you especially want to do with the years that are left?
No.
Listen. The spiritual aspect of your problem isn't my concern just now. Father Augustine is a saintly man of your own way of life, and you've talked to him in your own language. I am to talk about not what you may be leaving, but what you may be going to. You must help me. It's a large subject. If you were a young woman, I should suppose it was the call of the flesh or loneliness of heart. If you were approaching middle age, I should say dissatisfaction was your lot for a time, in any case, and that it would pass. What are you looking for outside? Or are you running away from something here?
I don't think they're right.
No?
No. The world, the sins of the world, I don't believe in it anymore. I don't mind.
I see.
I don't believe God minds.
If you were God, you'd forgive the world.
I don't believe there's much to forgive.
Yes, yes. You had a happy childhood. A happy girlhood, sister.
Yes, yes. Perhaps I was spoilt. I was certainly happy. I found people good, kind, lovable.
And yet you entered an enclosed order, as strict as the Carmelites or the Poor Clares.
It was the contemplative life. My soul was too big for my body in those days, and it's only in a life like this that it has room to grow and lose itself in the things that are bigger still.
And you were happy?
Very. Until my soul, me, I seemed to shrivel up to the size of a pea, and to be not worth bothering about.
That next, yes, of course.
Oh, I've read the lives of the saints, Father. At that stage, they become lost in the infinite. But I wasn't a saint. That wasn't my trouble.
I see.
Then Father Augustine directed me from contemplation for a time and advised me to meditate on our other purpose in being here. Expiation for the sins of the world.
And you didn't really know any to meditate on.
What?
Never mind. All right, I'm in the picture and I particularly don't want to discuss the spiritual side of things. Now then, tell me about your sister. Cecilia.
Cecilia?
Cecilia. Your parents are dead. Your only brother was killed in the Great War. Tell me about Cecilia.
She married.
Yes.
All right. She married a man, a non-Catholic.
That does happen, you know.
An atheist. And he was divorced.
Yes.
She went and lived with him. Till his wife divorced him. And they had a child before they were married. I prayed for her father, but I didn't blame her. I couldn't.
Yes?
Who was there to marry at home? We were brought up among Protestants, but we mustn't marry them. There were the brothers of the girls at school. She got engaged to one of them for a bit. My father arranged it. But she broke it off. She hardly knew him, and this man she loved.
Your family cut her off, wouldn't see her even after she married. You were a nun already, did they tell you?
No. They were only allowed to write once a year. They just didn't mention it, and Cecilia didn't.
Then who told you?
Mother Prioress. She became mistress of novices about then. It was her brother Cecilia had been engaged to. I'd rather not have known. I hated to have to pray for Cecilia. I was very young.
And you hated the prioress for telling you. And you've never been able to feel oppressed by any sense of sin.
Well, Cecilia is the only wicked woman I know.
Did you know she died?
She was older than I, of course. Only a few years. Cecilia.
She died many years ago. Sister Agatha, the only close surviving relative you got is her son.
Oh.
He's answered my letter and said he would give you a home at first, at any rate. He has a young wife who seems to agree. He says it would give him considerable satisfaction to pay your dead family back for the way they treated his mother.
Cecilia's son. What's he like?
I haven't met him yet. But if he were not a generous young man, he'd be more likely to pay them back by refusing to have anything to do with you. Your capital is held in trust, and the interest paid into the convent's bank. It would bring you in a couple of hundred a year. Your old home in Norfolk is now a branch of the Ministry of Coordination.
What?
A sort of enormous filing cabinet for the records of government departments.
A waste paper basket. Oh, well, at least it's something funny.
Yes. Well, perhaps you'd do all right after all.
I don't mind how I do. I tell you, I want to go. Perhaps I had something different once. But it's burned itself out. It's shriveled away. I'm an old woman. An ordinary old woman. Ordinary. Ordinary. And none of it means anything to me anymore.
But yet I know, where'er I go, that there has passed away a glory from the earth. Only it was a saint you were trying to be and not a poet. So it's heaven and not earth that's lost its glory, sister.
Yes.
Don't do it.
I can do it. I can try. I can write to the bishop. I can see him when he makes his annual visitation. No one can stop me. I can appeal myself to the Mother Provincial of our order in England. If she won't help me, I can appeal myself to Rome. I can. I can.
Sister, open that door. No, not the door to the enclosure. The door I came in by. Do as I tell you. Open it wide. Now, down that passage is a front door. That has to be opened from the outside with a Yale key, of which there is only one, which is kept at the local police station in case of fire. But it can be opened from the inside at any time of the day or night by anyone who cares to turn the handle. So there is no need for dramatics, is there?
I wasn't thinking about locked doors. I meant my vows, binding till death.
My dear child, there are more ways than one of dying. There were two women once, Siamese twins, joined back to back by a bond of flesh. Then one of them died. The woman who made those vows has died on your back. You'd get your dispensation. But still, I say, don't go. If you were a young woman who'd somehow skipped the time of our two wars and the dragging years between, I should say, go out and find your level. If you'd said to me, even being the age you are, that you knew now your vocation was for active good works, that you wanted to serve the poor or prisoners or children or, God help us all, lost dogs, I'd say, if sin and suffering call to you, go out and join the battle, veteran. But they don't.
I could.
No, they don't. You don't believe in sin, and you don't know what suffering is. You, born into your watertight little world of the old Catholic aristocracy. You who heroically refrain from judging your poor little sister, the only wicked woman you know. You to go out at 60 into a world that's ashamed only to hide its vices. How are you going to see all the evils that men and governments perpetrate in the broad light of day and learn to hate them and love them again in the few years you've got left, you poor old fool? Sister Agatha, you're smiling. In the name of fortune, what have I said that's funny?
I'm sorry, I wasn't really listening. Your voice reminded me so of old Father Mostyn at home, when my father told him off to persuade me against becoming a nun.
And you didn't listen to him either. Did you hear a word I said?
Oh, yes, about the few years I had left. My great-grandmother lived to be 96. At that rate, I might live out of the convent 2 years longer than I've lived in it. And I really don't see why I shouldn't. Do you?
Funny place to have a convent. You think they pick somewhere peaceful with orchards and things? His monastery garden sort of thing. Well, I suppose we just ring.
Yes, go on. Door looks pretty solid. Angela, look at those iron bars. It's a grill. Poor brutes.
Shh. It's opening. Yes?
We've come to... We're Miss Agatha Fosdyke's next of kin.
Sister Agatha Fosdyke.
No, she's not sister.
Well, they must still be calling her that, Peter, till today.
Oh, yes. I'll just open the door. Will you come in?
Thanks, but we'll wait out here.
Reverend Mother is expecting you.
Come on, Peter.
If you'll just wait in the parlour here, I'll let Reverend Mother know.
Thank you, Sister.
Peter, look. There's a much bigger grill thing in the wall. Except that's where they really keep them. Look.
I don't want to look at it. It makes me sick.
Well, it does look like the zoo. But if they didn't like it, they could all get out, I suppose, like your aunt.
After 2 years of argument and general hullabaloo, poor wretches, if they had the guts.
Ah, the sister portress told me you were here already. How do you do?
How do you do?
How do you do?
I'm Father Blake, the chaplain. Did you bring the clothes with you?
Yes. Well, I do hope they're all right. It was terribly difficult to get anything sort of careful and... Well, courageous for her, you know, but really suitable for someone with a mind like a nun.
You've taken a lot of trouble.
Well, I expect she'll be a bit scared, you know. And there's nothing like feeling you've got the right clothes on. The underclothes I am worried about still. I read somewhere they always wear wool, prickly, on purpose. And of course you can't leave wool off suddenly.
Darling, Mr. Father Blake is a priest.
Ah, here's the Mother Prioress. Mr. and Mrs. Swithin, Reverend Mother.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Oh, how do you do? You are being very generous, Mr. Swithin, in giving your aunt a home.
I'm very glad to be able to. But it's only a pokey London flat for our 2x4, I'm afraid.
Mr. and Mrs. Swithin have both been extraordinarily thoughtful and kind.
And they are quite aware of her financial situation?
Yes.
Don't worry, it's all right. We know she's only got fourpence and is only an annuity. We shan't murder her for her money.
I knew your grandparents very well. They were most kind to me as a young girl.
And my mother, of course.
Yes, indeed. Though she was a schoolgirl still when I became a nun. Hmm. Sister Agatha was in the chapel, I know. They can't have found her or she'd be here by now. Excuse me a moment.
Oh. No, your aunt isn't like that a bit. She is, though. I'd be less worried. I thought you knew how.
How what?
How remote her world was from yours when she had one.
Oh, I know. I've been reading it up and looking at old magazines and things. I'd rather have liked it myself.
You can't read up her world. It's never been written. The tiny, self-contained world of the old English Catholic aristocracy... If it weren't so likely to be tragic, it would be sensationally interesting. Like reviving an Egyptian mummy and turning it loose in the world today. She's coming. Come in, sister.
Yes, Father.
Aunt Agatha. You're going to be happy. happy. You're going to be free and yourself again and young again and alive. I'm going to look after you until you find your feet, and then you're going to do whatever in the world you like.
It's so good of you. So...
Oh, come on now. You're not crying.
No, I...
You are, you... She's not. She's laughing.
Sister.
Oh, it's all right. But it seems so silly. We've always spoken of you as Cecilia's boy. It's only just occurred to me I'm afraid I don't even know your Christian name.
Peter. Peter.
Yes.
Oh, and this is Angela, my wife.
How do you do?
How do you do? Father.
Yes?
Nothing. My dear, you must forgive my staring. I haven't seen a woman in ordinary clothes since the last time my mother came here 30 years ago.
Oh, absolutely all right. You have a good stare.
I've got my car parked around the corner, Aunt Agatha, and we're driving straight down to London. We're rather broke, you know. We can only give you the sort of loose box they call a spare room in our flat. I don't believe you're listening.
I'm sorry. I was, really. But you see, you're older than Cecilia was, years older. And so much more sure. It's ridiculous of me, you would be.
Sister, Mrs. Swithin has brought your clothes. You ought to go and change now. You've a long drive ahead.
Yes, I suppose so. To London, you said? Well, yes, quite far. But drive? Only to the station, of course.
No, a car is quieter than a train and more private. You like it, Aunt Agatha. And you can see the real England from the window, country roads.
England.
Go and change.
Yes, Father.
Here are the case and hat box. Mrs. Swithin has tried very hard to choose the right clothes for you. She hopes very much you're going to like them.
Oh, you shouldn't have gone to any trouble. Anything would do. It was very good of you.
That's right. Off you go.
Let me open the door.
Well, you're very quiet, Mrs. Swithin.
I hope it doesn't mean you're not going to like her, Angela.
No. No, it's all right. I am going to like her. Just that it's so terrible.
Terrible?
So huge for her, all this. I don't know how any of you can talk. Talk to her as if it was every day. There aren't words. There ought to be a different language or loud music to drown what you're thinking at a time like this. People oughtn't to see such things.
Why don't you sit down, Mrs. Swithin? We shall have some time to wait.
Quiet it is. What on earth is Aunt Agatha going to make of a London flat? Particularly our flat.
Is it a particularly noisy one?
It's particularly small.
You see, sir, I'm in a particularly small way of business.
I didn't mean that. I merely said it was physically a small flat.
Morally, it's even smaller.
What is your work, Swithin?
Jute.
Hmm?
Jute. What do you make lino out of?
Oh, yes, yes.
One of the principal exports of our late lamented Indian Empire. Filthy stuff.
Don't sound as if you'd found your vocation, either.
A good-natured cousin of my wife's found it for me. Ah, I fancy one business is much like another. The people who naturally buy and sell cleverly will have their fun, whether it's a cargo of ivory or peanuts off a barrow. I just haven't the knack.
But you catch the city bus every morning with pious resignation.
And come home every night in a worse temper. You're going to have to watch your language, darling, with Aunt Agatha around.
And you're going to have to snap out of the glooms, my sweet, and be little Susie Sunshine about the flat all day.
Oh, dear. I do hope we're going to be able to make it happy for her. We've just been concentrating on the idea of getting her out. It's going to be too funny for words if she finds she was better off inside.
Oh, well, if you work hard enough on keeping her happy, you may find that you've cheered yourselves up by mistake.
Sister Agatha is in her cell, dressing.
I wanted to warn you, Mr. Swithin. She is distressed.
Oh.
The clothes, I think, made it real rather suddenly. When you have lived with an idea for some time, it takes on a dream quality. And the realization is always a shock.
We'll look after her.
I believe this morning she'd elect to stay here.
Have you been talking to her, persuading her?
No, no, she's coming.
Swithin, Were you taken prisoner at all during the war?
Yes. And you're quite right. I don't like prisons or anything that resembles a prison.
Peter, don't you think you ought to bring the car round to the door? They won't let you park there because of the traffic, I know, but if you stayed in the car...
All right, it's only on the corner.
I'll leave you then. Goodbye, Mrs. Swithin.
Mr. Where are you going?
I? To the chapel, Father.
And Sister Agatha?
She's no longer in my care.
You stay and wish her Godspeed. That woman leaves this house with the sanction of the church. She leaves it with the honors of war.
Of course, Father, as you wish.
What does she like?
I beg your pardon?
Well, I mean, what's she interested in, to talk about and so on? We're going to be alone together a lot, all day. I thought I might get some books and mug up whatever she's interested in.
Well...
You set the prioress a teaser. You see, the nuns don't talk to each other except for half an hour a day, and then only in general conversation, not in ones and twos. They don't read books. Only the prioress is compelled by her office to have some contact with the outside world, to read the newspapers, for instance, reluctantly compelled. You'll find your aunt's mind virgin soil, an adult mind to deal with that was only born this morning.
Sounds rather a frightening idea.
It is. Here she comes. Be gentle now.
Oh, Peter.
Aunt, dear, the scarf, it's not over the hat. The scarf goes around the neck nowadays.
Oh, does it?
Yeah.
I thought as we were motoring, but then my hair, it's so short, I think I'll keep it like this. Reverend Mother, I had to keep on the skirt of our habit under the coat. The other was very short for me. I'm a little taller than you expected, Angela, I'm sure. I'll post the skirt to you, Reverend Mother. Here are my other things, my veil and...
The cross is yours. It would have been buried with you.
Thank you. I wear it then. Yes, inside the blouse, I suppose. Oh, and there's my ring.
But it's a wedding ring. Oh, that's a
pen. A nun is the bride of Christ.
And I can't get it off.
Stop it! Stop it, someone!
It won't come. No. There. My ring, Reverend Mother.
Thank you.
Now then, now look here, when you took that habit, the bishop blessed it, didn't he? Well, I don't see why I shouldn't bless your new clothes for the world. Kneel down.
Yes, Father.
Benedicat te omnipotens Deus in nomine Patris, et Filia, et Spiritus Sancti. Amen. Go in peace.
Come on.
Prioress, I'm torn between the prayers for an infant and the valediction for the dying. Go forth, Christian soul. Ah, well, I'm due at the hospital at 11. What did you make of the young people, Reverend Mother? The girl?
My experience is very limited.
If she'd come to you as a postulant, say...
She's not the type ever to imagine that she had a vocation.
I wonder what on earth they're going to make of each other. I must look them up in a month or two if I can wangle a reason for going down to London.
Yes, I dare say you would find it very interesting. Now, if you will excuse me, Father...
It's all right, Arthur. It's all right. Come in here again.
Look here, Angela.
Just for a moment, Peter. Now... You'll be all right. A chair, quick.
Yes.
We were hardly outside the door.
A glass of water, Reverend Mother, hurry. That's it. You'll be all right.
Peter, go round and get that car and bring it to the front and wait and damn the police.
I'll give you 5 minutes to get her out of this place. If you're longer, I'll leave the infernal car and I'll come in for her.
There, now just sit back and relax for a moment. What happened?
She just took a few steps, then stood and shook and stared and trembled. And when she tried to walk again, her ankle gave. The shoes had too much heel, I suppose.
There, sister. Drink this. All of it.
That's right. Better?
I can't do it. Reverend Mother, I can't do it.
What was it? Tell us.
I can't do it. I shouldn't have thought I could do it. Let me back, Reverend Mother, let me back. I'm an old woman, I'm too old.
No, you mustn't. You mustn't. You mustn't take her back. Linda couldn't stand it. Oh, Aunt Agatha, it's terrible. I know it's terrible. And it would be peace and quiet and heaven to stay, but you mustn't. It would haunt Peter. He couldn't stand it. Oh, God, you shouldn't have told anyone you wanted to get out if you weren't going to be able to do it.
Don't. Leave me alone. Stop her screaming in my ear.
Mrs. Swithin, you're going to have to trust me. Go out into the garden there for a few minutes.
But Peter...
He hasn't even heard a voice raised for years. You must leave her with us for a moment.
Well, all right. If you promise that she will...
That's right. You can see through the glass door. We aren't locking her up. Now then, what was it? Tell us. Come on.
Everything. The noise, the things blundering past, huge things. And the noise. It's like a great clanging blanket over your head. I can't stand it. It's no good. I knew this morning I couldn't stand it.
And what did you see?
Blundering and swirling and smelling.
Traffic. God bless my soul. I thought at least you'd seen an atom bomb going up.
And the women, the whole street was full of harlots with painted faces and bare legs. And a huge woman as big as three houses, naked.
What does she mean?
A film advertisement on a hoarding opposite.
And a poster, of course, but naked.
Agatha Fosdyke, you're being an ass.
Father, that girl, poor Peter's wife, she's a harlot. How can I live with her? I mean, I don't judge her. I don't, but what could I do if she...
You're even more of an ass than I thought. Poor little Mrs. Swithin, who's probably spent a couple of hours working out the quietest get-up in a wardrobe so as not to startle you, and only put on as little makeup as she possibly could and still face the light of day.
I told you, it's not the sin, it's the embarrassment.
Now, there's nothing whatever the matter but strain and shock. And I'll be bound to an empty stomach. Breakfast, Reverend Mother?
I am afraid I was not thinking of her. The cold lentils we always have.
Yes, half a saucer. Never mind. If we keep her to feed her now, we'll have young Peter pulling the place down to get her out. They must feed her on the way. Now, be quiet. And don't you call that child a harlot.
I shouldn't worry about Mrs. Swithin's face or her legs if I were you, Agatha.
I do think it was partly that I didn't eat my breakfast.
Mrs. Swithin, come in now, will you?
Yes.
Miss Fosdyke's ready to go now.
Goodbye, Margaret. Goodbye.
Goodbye, Agatha.
Come along, Aunt Agatha. Peter's brought the car round so you won't have to walk this time.
The prayer for souls at sea we should be saying, Reverend Mother.
Look, how are we supposed to keep up? There's no scrapping act. Will you start to nag the moment I put my foot inside the door? Well, where is she? Angela, I told you not to let her shut herself up in her room all day. She might just as well still be in her cell. Oh, for heaven's sake, turn that infernal thing off. You know she can't stand the radio.
Well, if you let me get a word in edgeways, I tell you. She's not here.
Out on her own? Good. At least, is it? Is she all right?
I doubt it. She's gone to see her old home at Brattersley.
Angela. 2 hours in a train. She's never been further away from us than round the corner to the church. You're mad. Then Brattersley. Don't you realise what a shock the place is going to be to her? The old house crawling with civil...
I just want to look round and see if there is not some useful work I could do among the poor of the village.
Poor of the village...
As I am sure that will be the best thing. And she says she'll be home for dinner.
Useful work. Why couldn't you have found something she liked doing?
Well, I've tried. Oh, Peter, I've dug out all Mummy's old trouts of friends from private hotels in South Ken and asked them to lunch with her. I've taken her to matinees, cinemas, hairdressers. I've tried manicures and facials, even a Turkish bath. She's perfectly charming about everything. But I honestly believe the one thing she enjoys is helping to cook and clean the flat. The only thing I haven't tried is a psychiatrist.
I did so want to see her happy.
Oh, darling, I'm sorry. So did I. Well, she doesn't seem unhappy somehow. She just looks as though she were waiting for it to start.
What do you mean, it?
Life or something. She has this amazing strength and energy, Peter. And the only thing she can do here is clean. I gather they did a lot of it in the convent. Quiet and steady and methodical. Sort of rhythmical. Watching her, I almost feel I could enjoy scrubbing and polishing myself. And then she just sits. She doesn't like novels much, and she seems to know all the religious books in the public library. Oh, she does acres of plain sewing. Oh. Again, sort of rhythmically. And then she does just sit.
Well, can't you get her to... Well, I don't know, play chess or something.
Oh, chess, Canasta. She'll play anything I teach her.
Well...
Because she thinks I want someone to play with.
Well, can't you get her to talk about what she wants?
Well, she's not a very cosy, gossipy, girls-together type.
Lived all these years with one lovely picture of the outside world in her mind, Bratislava before the First War. Dignity and leisure and lawns and cedar trees, and now she'll come crawling home with the last of her illusions gone.
Her? Oh, Peter.
I'll go. Come here, darling. That's right.
Good evening, Peter. Angela, dear.
Sit down, Aunt Agatha.
How about a drink? A spot of brandy will do you good.
Oh, no, thank you, Peter.
Yes, come on. Doctor's orders. You've had a long day, all those hours in the train, that's all. Now, drink up. That's right.
Thank you, dear. I was a little tired.
Well, now...
Would you like some dinner? Sorry, go on.
Nothing.
You're both looking at me very oddly. I hope you didn't mind my just leaving a note for you, Angela.
Oh, no.
It occurred to me that in case I couldn't find anywhere to stay the night at Bradsley, I'd better get an early train up there. You never knew it in the old days, did you, Peter?
No. No, my mother wasn't accepted anymore, you know. Oh, darling, forget about it. It was lovely, but all that's gone. Everyone's dead now. It would have been over for you anyhow. This is home. Well, we both want you. Forget all about it.
About Bratislava?
Yes.
Oh, no, I'll always remember it. I was very happy there. It's satisfactory to have seen it now. It's confusing to carry about a memory of the past as if it were a picture of the present. I've seen it and buried my dead.
You don't want to go and work there, do you?
My dear, all that's changed, too. The old almshouses our family founded in the village are a hostel for the girls who work at the house. Clerks and secretaries, very well paid. The cottages about the place have all got electric light and most peculiar little paved gardens. And they tell me the directors and senior officials live in them. And that they all have plumbing and central heating and are quite expensive. Everyone was very kind, but I think they were rather amused at my looking for... drunks and ne'er-do-wells and people with too many children. I wonder what's happened to them all. No, there's nothing to be done at Bratislava.
Oh, thank goodness.
But, Peter, I talked to the director there.
Hmm?
They keep the records of all the ministries, and he showed me round and explained. And I found out the most extraordinary things. India is independent. Ireland is a republic. There are no kings in Spain, Italy, Romania, Bulgaria. I forget where else. No Austro-Hungarian Empire, no Turkish Empire. Practically, I gather, not really a British Empire. And all in my lifetime while I wasn't looking. Why didn't you tell me?
It never occurred to me you didn't know.
He told me they'd had a revolution in Russia. Isn't that wonderful?
The serfs freed after all these hundreds of years. I remember a charming Prince Zermattov, a refugee after the students' revolt in 1905, who was a friend of my father's. He'd quite given up hope. And now Russia's a republic.
That's right. And Czechoslovakia and Romania and Hungary. And the Middle East is all split up. Iraq, Syria, Israel.
The Holy Land. I forgot to ask him. Peter, what's happened to the Holy Land?
The Jews have a government of their own there.
The Jews in Jerusalem? For I will give you a name and praise among all the people of the earth. How strange. In my own time, and not to know it. I'm sorry, my dears. It must seem odd to you, but I believe that is more real to me than all your history. All these years, singing the divine office every day, you know how much of the Bible is taken up with the lamentation of the Jews for Jerusalem. Lately, when prayer has been difficult for me, and the choir, the sort of torture that easily drives you mad, I've tried to concentrate just on the words themselves, and their meaning in the time when they were written. Choir. Have you ever heard office sung in a convent? Jerusalem, Jerusalem, convertere ad dominum Deum tuum. The words. I used to hang on to the meaning of the words till I suppose the Jews, several centuries B.C., are nearer to me than you people with your two wars. And I will bring back the captivity of my people Israel. And they shall build the abandoned cities and inhabit them. And they shall plant vineyards and drink the wine of them, and shall make gardens and eat the fruit of them. And I will plant them upon their own land, and I will no more pluck them out of their land which I have given them. What times you have lived in.
You know, Aunt Agatha, we've been inclined to look on you as having been dead for 30-odd years. It seems to me it's the other way around. It's a little uncanny.
But, Aunt Agatha, it has been a day, and you do look all in. Now, suppose you go off to bed, and I bring you some supper on a tray.
Oh, nonsense, my dear. I'll go and have a wash and change and be quite refreshed in time for dinner. I shall have to think of something different now. But I'd just taken it for granted I should be making myself useful up at Brassesley as soon as I'd found my feet. Yeah, it was silly of me.
And I suppose if you'd inherited Brassesley, so she would be. Oh, how heavenly it must have been.
Instead of which she's pigging it here with us.
Hmm? Oh, Lord! Here we go again. The unrecognized aristocrat, unable to settle to anything in an alien world.
What?
Look at Aunt Agatha, for heaven's sake. She is in an alien world, all right, and see how she takes it.
I've never played the aristocrat. I've merely agreed with you when you constantly point out that I'm simply not any good at making money.
You're telling yourself you're just above that kind of thing.
Above it or below it or beside it, I'm no damn good at it, am I? All right, but it's your world we're living in. You just remember that you chose... You'd let me take a regular commission when I had the chance at the end of the war. Things might have been quite...
So that you could sit back happily forever. Because your pay was fixed and there was nothing you could do about it either way.
Except work for promotion and get in a job I liked and was good at.
Promotion? Did you bother about promotion in the war?
No, I was too busy.
You've got as much ambition as a tram line. If I'd let you loaf around in the peacetime army, you'd have been retired as a major at 50. And we'd have grown beautifully old together on your silly little pension in a private hotel.
Well, as your soaring ambition on my behalf has achieved as 2-bed, 1 recep on a 4th floor in Fulham. And the bliss of 9 till 6 running up and down the 2 bottom rungs of the ladder.
Oh, I can't spend every day selling Aunt Agatha the brave new world if I have to spend every evening hearing you moan about it.
For heaven's sake, who started moaning?
All right, darling. If you like, I did. I'm sorry.
It's a strain, putting on an act all the time.
And what an act. Pretending to be happy in spite of your dreary lot.
Oh, Peter, really?
I wonder how much of an act you do bother to put on. It must be a temptation to use her as a sympathetic confidant, poor creature, to sob your heart out to her about your wasted life with your chronic flop of a husband.
Yes, it is.
Well, you get on with it, then.
Angela, what's the matter? Did you call out? I thought I heard...
You heard me yelling at Peter. And Peter banging out to the pub. You'll hear Peter banging back again around closing time.
Oh, my dear.
I'm sorry. I didn't realize how stupid of me, of course.
Of course?
Well, I mean, young couples are liable to shout at each other from time to time, I expect.
Aunt Agatha, you're amazing. You accept things so. Well, you do make things not seem to matter.
But they do. Of course they do.
Now, the thing that would help best would be not letting Peter think I'd worried you about it. It's only not having enough money and Peter being bored with his job and thinking that if I take one, it's because I despise him as the breadwinner.
Yes. It can't be only that, of course.
Well, believe me, it's quite enough.
I mean, that sort of thing must be just a symptom.
Now, look, I didn't say anything to make you think I don't love Peter.
No, no. But, I mean, if you had, that would only be a symptom too, wouldn't it?
But love him or not love him, there can't be anything more basic than that.
Can't there? I meant, apart from affection or emotion, something more. I don't know, something bigger to be lost in. There must be something large enough in the world. There must.
Aunt Agatha, please. Please, don't let me have worried or upset you.
My dear, don't worry about me. You have problems enough of your own. Perhaps I am just a little more tired after today than I thought. It's a strange world, all very strange. And one has so much to find out. No idea at all now to begin to know what to do. No idea at all.
Now, boys and girls, hush a moment. The lecturer will be here in a minute, and she'll want to find you all settled and comfy. And do fill up the front rows, there's good people. That's right. Settle down. You're going to find it such fun.
Miss Fosdyke, you'll be the death of me. Most human beings make more noise than you do just living, let alone doing something.
Oh, I am sorry, Mr. Plummer. It's always startling people, I know, and I do try to remember. But it's so difficult to cut sandwiches really noisily.
My dear, don't try, for heaven's sake. It's wonderful for our young people here at the club to see real peace in action. If they aren't in listening to the natter of machinery in the factories, they've got the radio on full blast. Oh, by the way, I'm getting the list of club activities out for next month. Do you know I've managed to book Perryman for the 23rd? Perryman.
Have you?
Miss Fosdyke, you've never even heard of Perryman.
Well, you corner me. But that's my fault, not his. And I'm sure the young people will be very excited.
Naughty. I do think several of them will have heard of him, you know. He's the great physicist. Confidentially, I believe he's already miles beyond the atom. Unfortunately, he's not a very good speaker. Oh, dear, just look at the notice board news map. And I did think Shirley Bates was going to take a real interest and keep it up to date.
Oh, what a pity, Mr. Plummer. Look here, I'll take it on. I make myself read the newspaper every day now.
Now, Miss Fosdyke, I will not have you taking on any more. Here, night after night, in the Mothers and Babies Club in the afternoons, you do quite enough. And the whole point of this sort of thing is that the young people do it themselves.
Mr. Plummer, do you think perhaps they don't really mind about the news?
I know they don't. One must keep on, that's all. One has seen what education can do. Do you know, when I was in the Army Education Corps during the war, I had 3 gramophone circles going in one unit.
Oh.
Swing, popular, classical, and students. And do you know, I had a bunch of pioneers who couldn't read or write, turning out the most exquisite freehand brushwork paintings I've ever seen in my life. You should have seen the difference it made to those men.
I'm sure it did. What a very interesting war you must have had.
Ah, one had the materials then. Whatever you wanted from raffia to documentary films, just requisition them. Well, we must just give of ourselves now, that's all. Oh, not the lecturer already. Come in.
Father Blake, but how unbelievably delightful.
Well, Miss Fosdyke, I'd been in London all day attending a stupid meeting for the bishop, and I'd sworn to myself I'd look you up.
Mr. Plummer, this is Father Blake, the chaplain of the convent where I used to live. Mr. Plummer is the warden here.
How do you do?
How do you do?
However did you run me to earth here?
I found your nephew and niece at home when I called, and they offered to drive me down here. I hope you don't mind, Mr. Plummer. I have to catch an early train in the morning, and I'm seldom in London.
Delighted, Padre. Of course, we're strictly undenominational here, but we're always pleased to welcome other workers in the battlefield.
Very nice of you. Lively looking place.
Oh, we do our best, Padre. We do our best, eh, Miss Fosdyke? Well, I must leave you to chat about the good old... Well, to have a chat, and I must get the club room ready.
Well?
Tell me all the news. It is good of you to look me up.
News? Well, the bishop made his visitation of the convent last month.
Yes.
Sister Imelda in the convent laundry celebrated her golden jubilee. Well, you know, there isn't ever any news.
I know. I'd never have thought I should live to be so anxious to hear some.
You gave up the idea of settling in Brattesley.
Brattesley didn't need me one bit.
Mind very much?
There was a lot to learn very fast, but no, not personally. But, Father, can you remember the 7 corporal works of mercy?
Out of the catechism?
Yes.
To feed the hungry, to give drink to the thirsty, to clothe the naked, to harbour the harbourless, to succour the imprisoned,
to visit the sick and to bury the dead. They're not works of mercy anymore. They're the business of the municipal council.
Well, there's no harm in jogging the council's elbow.
Charity is a dangerous drug to hide the symptoms of a disease that it's the state's business to diagnose and cure.
Oh, you have been learning fast. What in the name of fortune are you doing in this galere, then?
I'm beginning to wonder. I failed as Mary. I presumed I was cut out for Martha, but the virtue seems to have gone out of charity. When the poor are entitled to be fed and clothed and housed and hospitalized and buried, charity becomes as unreal as Brattesley, Father.
I see.
Here are some more visitors.
Hello, Aunt Agatha.
Quite a social world.
I don't suppose we shall ever find the car again, but wherever she is, she can stay 15 minutes.
We thought as we're here, if you could get the rest of the evening off, we could drive you home. Save you those 3 awful bus changes.
It's arranged. It's arranged. Not another word.
Oh, but...
Not another word. Who is the warden here? OC voluntary staff. All these lovely sandwiches done and everything ready.
Oh, but it's Mrs. Maitland's night and you know she never turns up.
Sensible woman.
Oh, naughty. You at any rate, Padre, know what good and useful work we do in our humble way. I see this place, if you'll forgive a military simile and an ex-soldier, I see it as a fort, defending a treasure of lovely things and making little sallies to spread the knowledge of them in the desert.
Well, would you mind if we kidnapped my aunt just for tonight?
Of course not, and I'll pretend to be her great fun.
Oh, no, you've been at it all day.
Well, one must justify one's existence somehow, mustn't one?
No!
I tell you what, plumber, I'd like to see your very interesting work here, if Miss Fosdyke might show me around before we kidnap her.
Well, that's jolly decent of you, Padre. Actually, the young people are all in the club room at the moment of the lecture.
I see.
I do think we could just peep in, Miss Fosdyke, and there are the handicrafts.
Peter, what does she mean? No, like that. It was rather frightening.
Well, if you thought you'd have to be like old Ma Plummer to justify your existence, you'd be frightened.
I am.
What?
Frightened.
Huh?
Oh, Peter, we are boshing things up so. Trying to... I don't know, it's like being Americans in reverse.
You do make it so clear.
Well, you know the way the Americans are always being richer and stronger and smarter than their fathers were. I mean, we're always trying to catch up with our parents. It's just as bad, really. Aunt Agatha has got something, you know. She just went up to Brattesley, took one look and said, all over. Okay, what now?
Yes, and you might just as well do the same, because I'm never going to be able to keep you in the style to which you were accustomed.
Damn it, Peter. Why must you turn everything into food for your blasted inferiority complex?
Because you keep thinking up such tasty new dishes for it. Aunt Agatha says you told her that we couldn't have a child because I couldn't afford to educate it properly.
Now, Peter, I didn't, and anyhow, what I mean is, why don't we face the idea that we never will be able to...
See what I mean?
And that it doesn't matter...
Oh, I've had enough of this. I'm going to get a drink. I'll be in the pub on the corner when they're ready for the car. I'm sorry, Aunt Agatha, I didn't see you. Excuse me.
Yes, another fight. Oh, don't worry. It's just a habit, like smoking.
You know, Angela, I believe I'm rather like a mother-in-law in your flat. You need that elbow room.
Oh, no, we very seldom throw things. Don't go, Aunt Agatha. Really, don't go. It helps, actually.
I should so like to be able to help you in some way. If there was something I could do...
But there is. You do it. Don't know what exactly, but you do.
Well, a lot of Irish up in our part of the world.
Oh, yes.
All they want is somewhere to dance, and we give it to them.
How interesting. Folk or ballet?
Plain Yank, I'm afraid.
Well, why not? Why not? You're so right. I must just peep in and make sure poor Miss Farrelly's isn't having any trouble with question time.
Swithin gone for the car?
Gone for a quick one, I'm afraid. If you're both ready, I'll round him up and we'll bring the car round to the door here.
Do, dear. Thank you.
Plummer's a good man, Miss Fosdyke.
I know.
Humble, sincere, selfless. You or I?
Yes.
The kind of fool our fathers called innocent. Of such are the kingdom of heaven. Which is one reason, I suppose, why so many other people...
It's no good, Father. I can't. I cannot go on.
You should have tried a hospital.
I did. An infant's clinic, a properly run official place. The professionals could do my work in half the time and the babies didn't cry when they weighed them.
Oh, you good women with your spiritual pride. What does it matter if the virtue has gone out of it? What does it matter if 100 people can do it better than you? What does it matter if 2/3 of it are a waste of time and the rest is probably a mistake? Can't you do the job for its own sake and forget its significance and yours?
I've wasted so much time already, wasted 3/4 of the only life God's ever going to give me.
Is that a good reason for banking so much on your own reactions now?
What else have I got? All right, if I'm wrong, please God, I'm wrong. All right, advise me. What shall I do? Tell me what to do.
You're under no vow of obedience now.
Can't you see I want to be told? I'll do whatever you say, whatever you say.
It's your life, not mine.
You can't say that. I'm too old to find myself with a life of my own and to be expected to plan it for myself. I don't know what to do.
Well, think how lucky you are only to find that out now instead of suffering from it for 60 years like most people.
Please, will you tell me what to do? It wouldn't matter really whether you were right or wrong. I shouldn't blame you afterwards if you would be so kind as to just to make some suggestion as to what I should do.
Add this. You took the new world as you found it after the first shock with more ease than most of us. I don't believe it's what you've met out here that's troubling you. It's something you brought out with you. What is it?
It's knowing I've only got 10,
15 years to do something with, after all. Wondering if I can endure to live so long.
Time. Shall I tell you there's no such thing? Yes, but there is. While it lasts, there is. Forget that you've anything to do. Forget that you have an immortal soul to save. Forget that any god ever gave you time to spend or waste. Forget that you were ever born. Forget that anyone ever christened any baby Agatha Fosdyke.
You mean lose myself, but I tried losing myself.
You tried losing yourself. All day and half the night for years and years, thinking how you could lose yourself, looking for the kingdom within you. Oh, great dangerous doctrine. The kingdom within you.
Don't. Don't. I hadn't the gift. I hadn't the grace. Well, but I've left all that behind.
Then, look at the kingdom you're in. There'll be time enough for heaven in eternity. Why did that phrase of Plummer's frighten you, justifying one's existence?
Because I can't.
Why bother, then? It's not your job. Contemplation has lost its consolation for you, and charity has lost its virtue. Forget the virtue, woman. Charity remains.
Blind, motiveless, purposeless, probably useless charity.
The dictionary meaning of the word charity is love. Your trouble is that you don't love your neighbors. There's no merit in feeding sandwiches and half-baked culture to a state-cared-for and state-educated child. And you get no consolation from seeing the one that's lonely in the factory finding some good, heartening noise and company here. That terrifying plumber, wasting his precious years with raffia work. He's warned and heartened every decade or so by some stupid eyes lightening up at the work of their own clumsy fingers with bright, lovely human pride. Because Plummer loves his neighbors. It's a thing you've never done.
You speak as if I wanted the reward, the satisfaction. I don't. I can work without that, if only I could find some purpose.
You won't find it here or anywhere like this. You might have known. If you had the purpose this life needs, you'd have wanted to teach or nurse or serve the poor in one of 100 other orders 36 years ago. Character may develop, but a temperament doesn't change that much.
So I was born just short of the love of God, and without the love of man. Do you realize what you're saying to me?
Now, you mustn't make too much of that.
It's true. Without the love of God or man, I need hardly have trouble to live as long as this, let alone starting out on a new life now. Oh.
Well, now, everything under control. Everything all right.
Mr. Plummer, I shan't be helping you here anymore.
You won't? Oh, now, look here, Padre, I take that a bit hard. I dare say you're short of helpers, too, but I mean, Miss Fosdyke's doing invaluable work here.
I'm not. I'm wasting my useless time.
Oh, now, really, Padre.
It's not your work, it's me. I am a waste of time. I'm no use to God or man. Useless. Utter waste.
What does she mean? What's she going to do with her life now? Padre, that sounded frightening.
It was. But isn't she here, Reverend Mother?
I thought so. I had a telegram.
The Sister Portress told me. She said she'd arrived. But she must have gone into the chapel. What did she say in her while?
Just the time that she would be arriving and the request that I'd see her. You saw her, I thought you said, recently.
I did. I gave her advice. No, not advice, even abuse. Blithering idiot.
You didn't advise her to come back?
No. But from what I said, she must have decided it was the only thing to do. She's taken her time, thought it over, and decided I was right. She's a woman with such an infernally logical mind. The world must be full of women who feels as she does. It must always have been full of them. Someone must, in all the eons of time, have thought of something better to say to them than what I said. But she's your headache, Reverend Mother, and don't you forget it.
You're the prioress of this convent, not me.
Well, yes, but Agatha Fosdyke is not one of my nuns. Well, that is very kind of you, then, Father, if you will see her. I'll ring the presbytery for you and tell them you will be delayed a little.
Hey, Reverend Mother, you're scared. I believe you're scared.
Why? What of?
Of an unpleasant, emotional scene that is going to take place in the next half hour in this room. Don't you deny it. Oh, Father Blake will deal with it. He's always making scenes and getting into tantrums himself. It won't upset him.
Well, you saw her recently, Father. It's because of something you said to her.
And that is straightforward blackmail.
I meant that she is, after all, in the world. Whatever her trouble is, it must be something you would know more about than I.
Even that isn't true. She's been looking at my world today through eyes more like yours than mine. Have you no humanity, I wonder? You knew her as a child.
Father, you know I can't help her.
No, but it might be nice to find you looking as if you'd like to. You needn't worry. Miss Fosdyke was well brought up and has spent many years schooling herself. She won't make a scene in any sort of bad taste, such as...
Reverend Mother, it's good of you to see me. I'm glad you are still here, Father. I hoped I might see you.
Do sit down, won't you, Agatha? Now, if Father Blake can stay for a little, I will just go and ring the presbytery for him.
Now, there's no need.
Oh, yes, indeed, Father. It's no trouble. I know you always have to hurry back on Thursdays. We must let them know.
Well, I shan't be staying long. It's you that Miss Fosdyke has come to see.
She's afraid.
She's human.
Poor Margaret. One forgets how quiet it was.
None of it out there improves on acquaintance.
Only the things that were there all along, to my mind. The parks and the countryside. And even that, you know. There's a tree in the garden here. A tall, rather scrawny willow. I used to watch it turning from grey-green to silver. The few that were left turning silver-gilt, like that old chalice in the sacristy. When you've got plenty of trees, you don't really notice them.
A bit like the sailor, aren't you? When you're at sea, you're homesick, and when you're at home, you're seasick.
Oh, but...
No, I'm not bullying you. You know that what I said to you the other day was very stupid, don't you?
No.
But it was. There's nothing on this earth so dangerous as putting out a finger to touch another human being's life.
It's your job, Father.
Yes. But then we should get danger money. You've been brooding over it?
Thinking about it. You were quite right, of course.
Right, right. What right have you to take it that I'm right? I'm not supposed to be infallible. I'm an impetuous ass, and you know it.
Well, it's perfectly logical. After all, if a bird doesn't use its wings or a reptile its legs for long enough, they shrink and wither away, don't they? I was here a long time not using those muscles, even if I was born with them.
It's a question of temperament. You suppose that because you hadn't got the mystical, you must have the active, whereas...
But, Father...
No. Don't jump to conclusions. I'm not saying you haven't
got... It's all right, Father. Whatever you said, I should do what I mean to do now.
And what do you mean to do now?
That is all right, Father. Father Clark will start to hear confessions for you at 6:00. And you can relieve him when you arrive.
Thank you, Reverend Mother.
Don't go, Father. You've had a talk to Miss Fosdyke?
Yes. Father Blake's very kind. I went home, Margaret, to Brattesley. It's a government office now. But I'd had an idea of settling in one of the cottages. Do you remember the little room you used to have next to Cecilia's when you stayed with us? It's an extra cloakroom for typists now.
Don't do this, Agatha. Don't try and tell me things. I can't help you. There's nothing I can do.
Of course you can't.
But there's nothing we can do. We knew, we told you it would be a shock. The things weren't the way you left them. But you'd have said yourself just not liking the way of the world was no reason for staying in a convent.
Margaret...
It's no good. It's no good, Agatha. Don't appeal
but...
to me. Hasn't Father Blake told you? I left you so that he could tell you. You can't come back.
But don't you...
Don't say anything for a moment. Don't distress yourself. I can do absolutely nothing. It's been a mistake, perhaps.
Margaret, please, you must listen.
No, don't. It's humiliating and degrading. You mustn't do it.
Please.
I tell you, I have no power to take you back.
But
It's not that you broke your vows, Agatha. You never broke them. They were unbound for you, but you didn't keep them. And how could they be accepted again?
Oh,
can't you see, even if the order were willing, Rome could never sanction
Father.
It. My hands are tied.
Father.
I have no power.
Father, stop her. Stop it.
Reverend Mother, I think she doesn't want to come back. Well, I must go and get out of my cassock. I left everything out in the sacristy. I'll look in again before I go.
I'm sorry, Margaret. I tried to stop you.
I didn't understand. You are happy, then?
Happy? No.
I thought when you telegraphed, and Father Blake seemed to think, too, that he had said something when he saw you that had been...
The last straw? In a way, it was.
Have you changed, then? What is it? I don't understand.
Perhaps no one ever broke your back. Have you ever known the real outer darkness, Margaret?
Despair afflicts us more than the others, you know.
There's no describing it. The loss... And the sense of loss. And the utter purposelessness.
One comes through it.
No, not some of us. I believe in God, the Father Almighty, creator of heaven and earth. And earth. I believe with acceptance, Margaret. With absolutely no experience of belief. And I love my neighbor with duty, Margaret. And absolutely no experience of love. I believe in the resurrection of the body and life everlasting. And I look towards death without the experience of any hope. There is for me now and from now on no consolation. And the relief of knowing and accepting that is unspeakable.
No one can help?
No one can help. And no one need. It is of absolutely no importance. It's over, Margaret. For me, there's no coming out on the other side. And it doesn't matter.
Ah, you're both very quiet. Was I right? She didn't want to come back.
No, Father.
But, then...
Father Blake is devoured with mortal curiosity.
Mea culpa.
Yes. Now, why the telegram? Why did you want to come up here and see me, then?
Because I wanted to consult you. And after this week, I shall have neither the time nor the money, I'm afraid.
But...
What about? If you had decided...
My niece.
The girl who came here to fetch you with her husband.
Yes.
My dear Agatha, don't you tell me that she has developed a vocation.
Margaret... You must get out of your head the notion that there is a queue of desperate women trying to invade your enclosure.
And what would you know about that, Sister Agatha? You only saw the few that got in under my guard. You'd be surprised how many there are. Well, but what about this niece, then?
Oh, they've been good to me, she and Peter. The only thing in the whole world that I want to do just now, I can't. I do want to so very badly to help them, and I can't. I'm even more lost in their world than they are. How can I help? So I had to come to you.
To me? But why?
It's your advice I want. They've been so very good to me, these two. I owe them so much. Angela, especially. Another woman in their tiny flat must have been a great trial.
And she's unhappy?
Well, you've seen them. He's resentful because she persuaded him to leave the army. And she's bitter because he's no good at business and they never have any money anyhow and she was brought up with expensive tastes. She won't have a child because she says it's a hateful world to bring a child into and, as a matter of fact, because what they spend on a baby they couldn't spend on themselves. Nothing very dramatic or tragic. Just two ruined lives. They're very young. I'm leaving their flat and I thought of you... You must have known such girls as Angela. What have you said to them? Have you ever found anything that helped?
Reverend Mother.
Forgive me a moment. Yes, Sister.
Mrs. Swithin is at the door, Reverend Mother. She...
Angela here?
Mrs. Swithin seems distressed, Reverend Mother.
Show her here into the parlour, sister.
Yes, Reverend Mother.
I didn't even tell her I was coming here.
Perhaps she's developed a vocation after all.
And distressed.
You probably left a trail of some kind. We're all amateur detectives nowadays. If she knows that you've given up work at the youth centre and you've disappeared from their flat and caught a train, it's a fair guess this would be where the train went to.
You're not to take her back. You can't do it. You can't. She wasn't happy here before. You know she wasn't.
Mrs. Swithin.
You, coming to London and pretending to be just a kind, inquiring friend, and all the time just trying to coax her back. Well, she's not alone now, and you needn't think she is. And my husband will go to law before he lets you take her back. You'd better be careful.
Be quiet, my dear, and don't be so silly.
Nobody's trying to make me do anything I don't want to do, Angela.
Well, then why wouldn't they let me in? Peter was right. The place is a prison. Your own family aren't even allowed to see you. They'll get you in behind there.
As a matter of fact, they wouldn't even let me in behind there.
Oh, Aunt Agatha, you wanted to.
Would that have been so bad? Is it such a good world, after all?
You could take it. We watched you. We know how much more ghastly everything must look to you than it did to us, and you could take it.
No, Angela.
And I thought, if you could take it, or so could we. It would be better to stop fighting and perhaps get some peace in the end. I had another colossal row with Peter, and then we had it out. And I said, right, go back into the army and let's have a kid, and the hell with what it costs, and get some fun out of having one. People do. And he said he'd always wanted one terribly, a boy. And we were going to, and he was going to find out about the army. Now it's not true. And even you couldn't take it. Oh, Aunt Agatha, we had built things on it. It seemed to matter so.
Angela, dear child, I didn't come back here to be a nun again.
You didn't?
I didn't want to come back.
Aunt Agatha, is that true? It had become so terribly important to us that you could take it.
I could take it.
It didn't all seem to be hell and useless to you?
No, no. There's nothing whatever the matter with you all but growing pains. Good heavens, the Dark Ages lasted 5 centuries. And in the first half of this one, you've already learned to fly faster than sound. You've discovered how to watch your heart's beating, to twiddle a knob and hear what they're saying in Yokohama or Peru, or see what they're doing in Sutton Coldfield. And you don't know what to do with it all. Too many Christmas presents. You've made yourselves sick and frightened yourselves into screaming nightmares with your own jack-in-the-box of an atom bomb. It's all right.
But the money, the solicitor. Peter came home at lunchtime in a tearing rage and said your solicitor had rung him up and he'd been to see him. Now, if you weren't coming back here, what was all that about the money? Did you know about it?
Nothing about any money.
Never mind that now, Angela.
But I do mind. I don't understand. Your solicitor told Peter you wanted to make over the whole of your annuity to him every year.
Well, dear, it was family money, and as it was an annuity, I couldn't leave it to him when I died, so I thought he might as well have it now. It's not very much, but anything's a help.
But what did you mean to do?
Well, I'm going to work.
But Aunt Agatha, Peter wouldn't take it.
Are you sure you really understood about money, Agatha?
Yes, perfectly. If Peter won't take it, I explained to my solicitor. Some of it goes already in tax, of course, and the rest, as it's paid into the trust yearly, my solicitor will simply hand it over to the Chancellor of the Exchequer.
She's mad.
I'm not mad. It's the obvious and logical thing to do. That's what's the matter with you all nowadays. You're trying to live in two worlds at once. Looking over your shoulders all the time. You accept the principles and you won't follow them to their obvious conclusions. I know the old-fashioned convention would have been to give it or leave it to some charity. Why on earth, when hospitals and the blind and cripples and orphans and the rest are all the business of the state? Hand it straight over to the Exchequer and presumably it goes where it's needed most.
You are mad. But if that's what you're going to do with it, Peter will take it and like it.
Good. I'm old-fashioned enough, too, to want to keep it in the family.
Miss Fosdyke, you're not young.
I can qualify for an old-age pension. And look at Sister Imelda in charge of the convent laundry. How old is she?
She must be 82 or 3.
And good for another 10 years. Besides, Angela, if I had the money, what should I spend it on? I did find the things women of my age are supposed to like so dull. I've worked it all out. It's the logical thing to do.
Do you know, I don't believe I am going to make Peter take the money. I think I'm going to tell him I believe he can stand on his own 10 toes without it. I think that would shake him. I think that would shake him quite a bit. And you know, I honestly believe he could.
Good for you.
But, oh, Lord, I hate to think of the government getting it.
I think that settles what I came to see you about, Margaret.
All the same, Agatha, I'm glad you came.
Well, we must go, Angela. There was a train back I meant to catch at 6:25.
You haven't told us what you're going to do.
Oh, I found a room, very clean and cheap, in a little street near where I'm going to work, so that I shan't have to waste money on bus fares. I'm going to move over there tomorrow, if that's convenient for you, Angela, so as to be settled in nicely by Monday.
And what is the work? And how and why did you hit on it?
I think perhaps it's a mistake to go about trying to do good. It might be better just to do something well. Angela, you remember you made me come with you to the cinema the other day. I was very interested in what it said.
What said, darling? It was that Technicolor Life of Ivan the Terrible, wasn't it?
Oh, well, you know, I always keep my eyes shut during the colored ones. No, the other man.
Well, there was the Mickey Mouse and the new...
No, the man who talked about exports.
The COI short? You didn't believe that. They're propaganda.
It sounded very reasonable to me.
Oh, why did we ever let you out at all?
He simply said the country couldn't buy food or luxuries or afford any leisure because it hadn't any money. And the only way to get any money was by making things and selling them abroad. Really, I can't see anything to stare at in that.
I beg your pardon.
Well, anyhow, I went to the place they call Labour Exchange, and they found this work for me. It's quite a small factory where they make the parts for wireless sets.
Oh.
Well, it's a terrible thought, in a way, that one should be perpetuating all that noise, but one can always hope they will mostly be used for ships' radios. They tested me and found my hands were quite neat and quick. And apparently they do a very large export business. They pay £3.15 a week to start with, and it's all quite satisfactory.
I don't believe it.
Now, don't be a goose. There's nothing to gawk about.
But we wanted you to be happy.
Happy? Happy? What do you think we all are, birds? With bird brains and nothing to do all day but sing and nothing to think about morning, noon and night but feeling happy?
That's what I ought to have said to you.
Human life is larger than happiness. There's room in life for mountains, deserts, depths, pain, beauty and love. And love contains more than emotion and affection. Yes, and more than being kind and feeling happy and being kind. Love is acceptance. And I accept life.
Flora Robson has been starring as Sister Agatha in The Return by Bridget Boland, adapted for radio by the author. Appearing with Dame Flora were Betty Hardy as the prioress and James Thomason as the chaplain. Peter Swithin was played by Gabriel Wolfe, Angela Swithin by Hilda Schroeder, Cyril Plummer by Dennis Blakelock, and the lay sister by Gwen Berryman. The production was by Graham Gold.